could not see David, for he hadn't been there on that long-gone day when this sun-drenched conversation had taken place. They were all unaware that a man of their remote future would one day marvel at them, a man with the ability to make this everyday moment come alive and run through, again and again, utterly changeless. He flinched as the men collided softly with him. The light seemed to dim, and he no longer felt the stone's sharpness beneath his feet. But then they were past, walking away from him, their conversation not disturbed by so much as a word by his ghostly encounter, and the vivid reality of the landscape was restored, as smoothly as if he had adjusted the controls on some invisible soft screen. He walked on toward Capernaum. Jesus was able to cure mind-mediated and placebo diseases, such as back pains, stuttering, ulcers, stress, a fever, hysterical paralysis and blindness, even false pregnancies. Some of the cures are remarkable and very moving to witness, but they were restricted to those whose belief in Jesus was stronger than their belief in their illness. And, like every other healer before or since, Jesus was unable to cure deeper organic illnesses. To his credit, he never claimed he could. His healing miracles naturally attracted a great following, but what distinguished Jesus from the many other Hasidim of his day was the message he preached with his healing. Jesus believed that a messianic age promised by the prophets would come, not when the Jews were militarily victorious, but when they became pure of heart. He believed that this inner purity was to be achieved not just through a life of outer virtue, but through a submission to the terrible mercy of God. And he believed that this mercy extended to the whole of Israel, to the untouchables, the impure, the outcasts, and the sinners. Through his healing and exorcisms, he demonstrated the reality of that love. Jesus was the golden mean between the divine and the human. No wonder his appeal was electric. He seemed able to make the most wretched sinner feel close to God. But few in this occupied nation were sophisticated enough to understand his message. Jesus grew impatient at the clamoring demands for him to reveal himself as the Messiah, and the Lestai, who were attracted to his charismatic presence, began to see in him a convenient focal point for a rising against the hated Romans. Trouble coalesced. David wandered through the small, boxy rooms like a ghost, watching the people, women, servants, and children, come and go. The house was more impressive than he had expected. It was built on the pattern of a Roman villa, with a central open atrium and various rooms opening off it in the manner of a cloister. The setting was very Mediterranean, the light dense and bright, the rooms open to the still air. Already, so early in Jesus' ministry, there was a permanent encampment outside the house walls. The sick, the lame, would-be pilgrims, a miniature tent city. Later, a house church would be built on this site, and then in the 5th century a Byzantine church that would survive to David's own day, together with the legend of those who had once lived here. Now there was noise outside the house, the sound of running feet, people calling. He walked briskly outside. Most of the inhabitants of the tent city, some of them showing surprising alacrity, were making their way toward the glimmering sea, which David glimpsed between the houses. He followed the gathering crowd, towering above the people around him, and he tried to ignore the stink of unwashed humanity, much of it extrapolated by the controlling software with unwelcome authenticity. The direct detection of scent through worm cams was still an unreliable business. The crowd spread out as they reached the rudimentary harbor. David made his way through the crush to the water's edge, ignoring the temporary dimmings as Galileans brushed past or through him in their eagerness. There was a single boat on the still water. It was perhaps 6 meters long, wooden, its construction crude. 4 men were patiently rowing toward the shore. Beside a stocky helmsman at the stern was a piled-up fishing net. Another man was standing at the prow, facing the people on the shore. David heard eager muttering. He had been preaching from the boat at other sites along the shore. He had a commanding voice which carried well across the water, this Yesho, this Jesus. David struggled to see him more clearly, but the light on the water was dazzling. And so we must turn, with reluctance, to the true story of the Passion.